From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and happy Labor Day. Welcome to a special edition of Washington Watch. Actually, what you're going to hear is a program, or at least portions of a program that we recorded last month, a special program. You'll recall the State Department, they had a historic gathering. It was the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom, where international leaders were called together by the Secretary of State to discuss religious freedom. And we wanted you to hear this program again because the content was so rich, and this is such an important issue. Well, the New York Times editorial board tried to take issue, not with the topic of religious freedom, but the administration. Here's the program. Now, this was the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. First time ever that a Secretary of State had called a gathering of national leaders, international leaders, to address the issue of religious freedom. The editorial board went on to claim that the Trump administration has, quote, a too narrow vision of religious freedom, saying the Trump administration embraces a laudable desire to expand religious tolerance, but its own intolerance towards some undermines the message, end quote. Well, to address the New York Times accusation, we have what I believe is a Washington Watch first. We will feature guests of three different faiths, Christian, Jewish, and Muslim. In just a moment, we'll talk with Michelle Bachmann, former congresswoman from Minnesota and an evangelical Christian, who is now leading a prayer ministry at the United Nations. Then we'll talk with Dr. Danielle Mark, who is Jewish, the former chairman of the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom. And then a little later in the program, we'll discuss religious freedom issues with Ismael Royer. He is Muslim, a research and program associate at the Religious Freedom Institute. All that coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. Okay. As I was talking about, this past July, just month ago, the State Department convened the first ever Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. Now, this was one of Mike Pompeo's, the Secretary of State, one of his first initiatives, and it brought together government officials, representatives of international organizations, religious leaders, human rights advocates, members of civil society organizations from all over the world for about 3 days. To have discussions on how to advance religious freedom. In fact, there was a takeaway. Countries were challenged to do something to advance religious freedom, maybe follow America's model of having an ambassador for religious freedom, having a religious freedom roundtable that combined both government and non-government organizations to discuss and advance these issues. And they came out with a statement that in many ways followed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the UN Declaration back in 1948, 70 years old. But I want to read for you a couple of the paragraphs, the opening paragraph of this editorial from the New York Times. Quote, even President Trump's fiercest critics can find something to applaud in the administration's campaign to protect and advance religious freedom around the world. It's hard to criticize. But that doesn't stop the New York Times. They go on, but the initiative's good intentions are in danger of being undermined by the administration's political agenda, which emphasizes the American strain of evangelical Christianity over other beliefs. In addition, the administration is pursuing immigration and foreign aid policies that belie its stated defense of religious rights, end quote. Well, joining us now is former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota. She was also a member of the House Intelligence Committee and a fighter for freedom. Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you. Great to be here with you today.
Now, Michelle, you've been around government for some time. You also have been a part of the President's Evangelical Advisory Board. Would you say that this administration in its work with evangelicals is actually threatening religious freedom or advancing it?
It's advancing religious freedom. There is no question that it's advancing. I think the New York Times is probably fearful of just what a stellar job the Trump administration is doing, because let's face it, the New York Times has never been a champion of Donald Trump, let alone religious freedom and the tolerance that goes along with that. America is really unique. Going back to the days of Thomas Jefferson, one of the three things that Jefferson was the most proud of was his draft statement on religious tolerance. That's what we believe in America. You can believe any religious faith or no faith at all, and you can be protected in that right, both in belief and in freedom of expression. And so for the United States to be that beacon on a hill to advance religious freedom and expression, we have truly been an example for the world. Now, that also says that historically in the United States, we have been made up of people who are overwhelmingly biblically based. Primarily, they are Christians, believers in Jesus Christ, but also Jews as well. We've had a very, very low population of Muslims in the United States throughout America's history, almost imperceptible until about 1965, when America's immigration laws changed and preferred Muslims, essentially, and people coming from Muslim regions over people from traditionally European areas.
In this kind of opening portion of the editorial, they take a shot, which they don't explain or defend anywhere in the piece, that this is being undermined by the administration's political agenda. And I guess I'm curious, what is the political agenda they write about? Is it the ending of the Obama-era radical social policies that actually launched an assault on religious freedom? I mean, like the HHS mandate that forced the nuns at the Little Sisters of the Poor to pay for contraception in their health care plans? I mean, is that the agenda that this administration is about, undoing the damage from the previous administration?
Well, that's a good agenda in my mind, and I think that's the agenda that the American people asked for at the ballot box this last year. But again, what we're talking about is the New York Times, and their agenda is an open border policy. They don't believe that America should have borders. They believe that anyone, unvetted or not, should be able to come into the United States. Well, that's insanity. No one has that type of policy. They don't remain a nation very long if they do. And
Right. We
cannot protect the safety or the national security of the American people. In fact, your listeners have heard the tragic story of Molly Tibbetts from Iowa, who was recently killed by an illegal alien in a real tragedy. And This is someone who came into the United States illegally and used stolen identity in order to get a job working on a dairy farm in Iowa. And now this girl is dead, this innocent girl. And what we need to understand is there are reasons for maintaining a border. And many people don't realize there is no right to come into the United States. There's no right for 7 billion people across the planet to become American citizens.
And the editorial board here conflates the issue of immigration and national security with religious freedom.
That's right.
Because they make reference to the president's extreme vetting, which made its way through the court and was upheld. But what's interesting in that list of 7 countries, Michelle, that are on the president's list, 5 of them are Muslim, 2 are not. If the president were targeting Muslims as opposed to targeting countries that produce terrorists, why not go after the countries where you have the largest populations of a population of Muslims, like Indonesia, Pakistan, and India, which are not on this list? So the president's motivation here, which they step over to try to build a case that the president's motivation is religious, when it's national security.
No, that's right. And as a matter of fact, they don't mention that President Trump chose the same 7 countries that were designated terror states as President Barack Obama did. These are the same exact countries. The only difference being Barack Obama almost preferred letting people in from those 7 countries. He granted waivers where there shouldn't have been waivers granted, and instead Donald Trump has been listening to the American people who are fearful of terrorism. Because remember, in the lead up to the election in 2016, almost every week there was another terror attack in the United States. If we go back to that time,
right.
We all remember the Pulse nightclub tragedy. Among many, many others, week after week after week, there were terrorist activities. And so what President Trump did is send out a signal. We are not interested in allowing terrorists into the United States. It's been a remarkable drawdown in the number of terrorist attempts in the United States simply because Donald Trump has taken this issue seriously and has said we need to get a hold of our border, which, by the way, is exactly what the American people elected him to do. That is very different than dealing with the issue of religious freedom, because President Trump is just as much an advocate for religious freedom for Muslims in America as he is for Jews in America, as he is for Christians as he is in America, or atheists. He is a believer in religious tolerance for all in the United States. Now, you don't find that in Saudi Arabia. You cannot proselytize for Christianity in Saudi Arabia or in other various Muslim countries. Here you can in the United States. And President Trump is trying to stand four square for religious tolerance for all people, no matter their religious background.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota, my guest. She was also a member of the House Intel Committee. And Michelle, let me ask you that. Based on, you were selected by your colleagues to serve on the Intel Committee, a very small committee, and you had some of the nation's most sensitive materials, and you knew what was going on. Based on that, has President Trump been making the right moves as it pertains to our nation's security?
Oh, 100%. I'm not saying that to be partisan. I am so over the moon about the moves that Donald Trump has made. He's gone after the worst of the worst. He ripped up the Iran agreement, which was a fraud from the inception. And he has done more to benefit Israel than any other president. He's done more to bring peace to the Middle East than any other president. He's taken on the conundrum of North Korea, and he's tried to advance that effort to denuclearize that area and send a signal to Russia, to China, that we're not going to put up with really an economic-type warfare through the bad trade policies that we've had in the past. That also impacts national security. So I think nearly every nation in the world has got the memo. We have a new sheriff in town. Donald Trump is upholding American law when it comes to national security, but also to the religious freedom rights of all Americans. And that's something that would benefit the entire world and something that they would be desirous of in their own nation.
Without question. Michelle Bachmann, as always, great to have you on the program. Look forward to seeing you next week here in Washington.
Will do. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. When we return, we're going to keep the conversation going with Dr. Danielle Mark. He's the former chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. All right, don't go away. We're coming back right after this.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, doing something I don't normally do, just spending the entire program on one topic, but I think it's a significant topic because it's such a large part of what this administration is doing, and that is, as the president did in his executive order domestically, he has said that, we're going to protect and promote religious freedom in this country. Well, the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, taking over for Rex Tillerson, said, you know what, we're not wasting any time. And so he called a gathering of international leaders in what was called a ministerial to advance religious freedom. Now, I think what we're seeing here is the New York Times, as well as most of the media, intolerance has been unveiled in this administration as they have come after this president every turn. And in an editorial earlier this week, taking him to task on this ministerial, saying, oh, yeah, it's a good goal, but their evangelical agenda will undermine what they're trying to do. And they took shots at the vice president as well. Well, joining me now to talk about this further on the issue of religious freedom is Dr. Danielle Mart. He is the former chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which I now serve on. He's also assistant professor of political science. He teaches courses like political theory, philosophy of law, and politics and religion. Light stuff, you know. And he is also Jewish. And I welcome him back to the program. Dr. Danielle Mark, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's great to talk to you.
You served on the commission during the last term of Barack Obama. The last year, you were the chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. And so I want to ask you this question. Is there a difference between how the Trump administration and the Obama administration addressed religious freedom?
Oh, there's a huge difference. As you said, it's both on the domestic and the international front. On the commission, as you know, through your service there, we deal strictly with the international stuff, and so that's what I saw most directly there. But there was a huge difference. The the Obama administration really downgraded religious freedom as a priority in foreign policy. There were other issues that our ambassadors and embassies around the world were pushing with enormous force, and religious freedom really got short shrift. It was interesting, you know, during the same time period, we saw Trudeau become prime minister in Canada and actually close. They had an ambassador, too, for international religious freedom, and he closed the office and eliminated the position. I mean, I think if not for the fact that it was Congress that had created this position and our commission, you know, I don't know if the Obama administration would have done the same thing, but it's completely different. You know, we fought tooth and nail with so many other groups by our side to get the Obama administration to recognize what was going on in the Middle East under ISIS as a genocide, just to use the G word. And both President Trump and Vice President Pence have used that word and insisted that that is the policy of the administration. They have taken tremendous steps to make sure that funding is actually reaching the vulnerable communities and not going through the UN where it gets lost. And we could go on and on about concrete things that this administration has done to prioritize religious freedom in a way that the previous administration did not, internationally and then domestically as well, of course.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, kind of a timeline, as you mentioned, the genocide in Iraq and Syria. In March of 2015, the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights made the statement that what's happening here is genocide. A year later, March 2016, the United States House of Representatives voted unanimously declaring what was happening there to the Yazidis, the Christians, and some other Muslim minorities was, in fact, genocide. After that, finally, we saw the Secretary of State John Kerry declare that the violence in this initiated by ISIS was, in fact, genocide. So it took the administration a long time. And I guess the reason I bring that up, Danielle, is because in the editorial, they say, well, that the Obama administration addressed the issue of religious freedom. He made a point of reaching out to the Muslim world and to as well as to other faiths. But on his watch, there was genocide.
Yeah, it was, I mean, frankly, it was an idiotic and disgusting editorial, not just because of the cheap shot at you. It on the facts, it seems to be gravely mistaken, but also the judgment. It's almost as if they can't bear to admit that the Trump administration is actually doing something good and that they can't disagree with. You know, there's, and one doesn't have to be a big defender of President Trump and his administration to recognize that the leadership that they've shown on this issue has been really important, even momentous. I mean, the article doesn't bother to mention, the editorial doesn't bother to mention that this was Secretary Pompeo's first ministerial of any kind, that he chose this topic. It doesn't bother to mention that that's the first ministerial ever on religious freedom. Those are significant precedent-setting steps that the administration took, but you're not going to see any of that there. I don't know if you saw The Economist also had a very begrudging comment, but even The Economist recognized that there was a lot of prominence given to the Uyghur Muslims and a lot of prominence given to persecution of the Rohingya Muslims in Burma, the Uyghur Muslims that are in China, the Rohingya Muslims in Burma. And it's really sad. It's almost, not to psychoanalyze the editorial board, but it's almost if they can't bear to admit that evangelicals deserve credit in this country for being at the forefront of caring for people of all faiths around the world. I mean, the charity work, of course, that evangelical missions do around the world is well known and really probably second to none, I would imagine. But also just the way that this is a real live political issue for evangelical Christians around the world who care about this, who make sure their elected representatives care about this and fight for this. And, you know, the liberals should care about these things no less. It is a sacred right that we hold as Americans, as believers or not. And yet they're probably embarrassed, I would imagine, that they're very late to the party in terms of caring about these kinds of things. So instead, they twist it around and say there's really a secret agenda to promote evangelical Christianity at the expense of others, which, having done it myself, as you said, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I did it for 4 years from inside the belly of the beast in Washington, D.C., and there's nothing of the sort going on.
Well, Dr. Mark, you answered my other question. That is, as a Jewish American, are you intimidated or concerned about the concern evangelicals have for religious freedom?
No, it's a great thing. If more people shared the views of evangelicals, the world would be a better place. There are so many good Christians in America who completely selflessly, they have nothing to gain but care about your Hindu Muslim.
Danielle, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. Thanks so much for being with us.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
This is Washington Watch, website TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're continuing our conversation about religious freedom, dedicating the entire hour to the topic. Specifically, we're discussing an op-ed that was published earlier this week by the New York Times, entitled "A Too Narrow Vision of Religious Freedom." The Trump administration embraces a laudable desire to expand religious tolerance, but its own intolerance towards some undermines the message. And I said, I think this is a first. We're addressing this issue from, we had an evangelical Christian, we had an observant Jewish American, and now we're going to be joined by an American Muslim. Joining us now is Ishmael Royer. He is a research and program associate at the Religious Freedom Institute, which is based in Washington, D.C. He was at the ministerial to advance religious freedom. Actually, I visited with him there. Ishmael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for having me. I appreciate being here.
Well, I appreciate your work on behalf of religious freedom. And I want to ask you, I think you've read the New York Times piece. Do you think it accurately portrays the religious freedom policy being pursued by this administration?
No, I don't. I'll say that I certainly believe that it would be fair to say that the consensus among the American Muslim community is that they're not pleased with the administration. But I will say that that doesn't mean that we can't get behind the administration when they do something good, and it would just be simply unfair to try to denigrate the administration when they do something good. And I would say that its focus on religious freedom has not in any way been intended, at least as far as, you know, as I've seen, to advance religious freedom for one particular group, or as the time suggested for evangelical Christians, but rather the Ambassador Brownback and the staff over at the State Department have clearly fought for religious freedom for everyone, including Muslims. And we've seen how Ambassador Brownback, in his first appearance as after his confirmation, attended an Islamic conference, was actually criticized for that. But he went there and advocated for religious freedom for all. And he's also been to Rohingya camp, a Rohingya Muslim refugee camp. And so I'm not here to cheerlead for the administration, but I will say that just to be in all fairness, its work on religious freedom has been for everyone.
And as a, I'm an evangelical Christian, and,
yes.
and I am passionate about this issue. You know, I had a brief conversation at the ministerial.
Yes.
I believe every human being should have the freedom to choose. They should have the freedom to choose God or not choose him. And,
yeah.
and so that, I will fight for that right. Now, as an evangelical, I hope they choose Jesus Christ as
right.
The way, the truth, and the life. But I will fight for them to have that truth and or have that choice. And
yeah.
That is what the vast majority of evangelicals want when we talk about religious freedom. And you made reference to that. You said that religious freedom is either not understood or it is seen as a code for an American agenda or secret missionary work or something like that. Do you
yeah.
think that even what's your thought about evangelicals advocating for religious freedom?
Well, I'll tell you what. I have been involved in the nonprofit world in Washington, D.C. since 1993. I was around when the International Religious Freedom Act was passed, and Ambassador Brownback at the time, Senator Brownback, advocated for it. And I have been present at I was at Ambassador Brownback's confirmation hearing. I lobbied Democratic congressmen to lift the hold off of Ambassador Brownback's nomination, and I've been present at Ambassador Brownback's weekly meetings at the State Department with the International Religious Freedom Roundtable, which is a coalition of many, many, many different religious groups and even atheist groups who come every week. The ambassador hosts them, and he listens to everyone that speaks, and he's very, very, and by the way, while I'm there, I have worked closely with the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. I've worked with Wilberforce, 21 Wilberforce, I'm sure you're very familiar with, and now I've gotten to know yourself and others from the FRC, and I have not seen any evidence that these mainstream organizations like yourselves have, of course, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is not an evangelical, but, I haven't seen any evidence that this is some sort of conspiracy or whatever to promote Christianity against Islam. Rather, I, as the Times article seemed to be suggesting, I really take exception to that, and anyone who would say that simply has not bothered to show up to these meetings. I mean, if they show up to these meetings, they'll see that groups like Wilberforce and others, USCCB, they have been very, very consistent in arguing and advocating for religious freedom for everyone.
Ishmael, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you for joining us and look forward to talking with you again.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right, coming up next on this special Labor Day edition of Washington Watch, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, joins me as we tie a bow on this topic of religious freedom, the New York Times, and the Trump administration. Don't go away. We're back right after this.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to this Labor Day edition of Washington Watch. We were playing for you part of our program that was recorded a couple of weeks ago. A historic program. We had an evangelical leader, a Jewish leader, and a Muslim person of the Islamic faith who works for religious freedom. All on Washington Watch in one program, talking about the ministerial to advance religious freedom that the Secretary of State held just a little over a month ago in Washington, D.C. Joining me now to talk more about this is Travis Weber. He is the Vice President of Policy at FRC, a religious liberty attorney, also headed up our Center for Religious Liberty. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be here.
All right. This whole thing kind of started with the New York Times, as I've already talked about with other guests, having this kind of negative, well, it wasn't kind of, it was a negative editorial, having to give credit to the administration for having the ministerial, but kind of saying, well, but we their politics and motives undermine what they're trying to do. Why the opposition to religious freedom? This is not a new topic, but it seems like when it's connected to evangelicals who are wanting to advance it, somehow the liberal media has to take shots at it. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's several things at play here. One, there's this sort of overriding political conception where lurking behind, you know, in the minds of many, lurking behind every dark corner is the created boogeyman of the evangelical. You know, somehow because that boogeyman is there, something is not legitimate, despite the fact that the evidence on paper of the policy clearly shows it's a legitimate and a good, it's a policy that would further the common good of our society and societies around the world. But because someone puts it forth, person A puts it forth instead of person B, it's somehow illegitimate. It doesn't make any sense. And people really would be better served if those seeking to look at what these policies do would actually look at the policies instead of relying on the conceptions of their own minds for why something's legitimate or not. The second problem with this is for many, religious freedom, they're going to pick and choose. They're going to pick and choose when it's convenient to support it or when it's not convenient to support it. And you see this when people have a problem with religious freedom, when it concerns issues related to the individual sexual rights agenda or abortion or something like that, they have a problem. But meanwhile, they have no problem with it when it concerns other things. So they're not being fair and honest. Right. They need to own up to their position on religious freedom, and evangelicals and many others are supporting it across the board.
Yeah, and that brings up an interesting aspect, because it's not just religious freedom, but it's many issues. If someone advocates for or comes to a position on a certain issue based upon their faith, there are some that, if it's a Christian faith, that hold the view that they're immediately disqualified because their position emanates from their faith. That's a worldview. That's just how evangelical Christians who have a biblical worldview operate. But I think the other aspect of this, Travis, may be that the fact that evangelicals, the reason it's concerning to the left is that evangelicals mean it. They really want people to be free to have a choice, whether that's to choose Christianity and choose God or not to choose God or choose another faith. They just want everybody to be free to have that choice.
Yeah, and this is a problem for the person who kind of looks at government and the state as occupying the role of being the final arbiter of what is good or moral or proper in a society. Because, for the person, the Christian and others who believe in true religious freedom, you recognize the ability of people to disagree and dissent in the public square, and you would seek to persuade them in that marketplace of ideas, but you recognize their role in that marketplace of ideas. Whereas the person, the modern progressive mind that's become very anti-religious and I think drives a lot of these issues that we see, arguments pushing religion from the public square, they look at the state as the final moral arbiter, and therefore anything which violates their sort of moral system the state is setting up has to be pushed to the wayside. And this is where you see a lot of the opposition. It's actually very unfree, very totalitarian mindset, which kind of forces this conformity at the hands of the state for the modern progressive.
But for those, as we've heard today on the program, Michelle Bachmann, we heard from Danielle Mark, who was the former chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, and Ishmael Royer, who is Islamic and works for, advocates for religious freedom. Those in three different faiths, but they understand the power and the positive impact of religious freedom.
Yeah, they do. And, it's interesting to think about this, because we could take the positions of all these folks, despite their differences on theological matters, we can take the positions that they hold on religious freedom and could come to some agreement on paper on what religious freedom means and what we want to support and what we want to advance. And that is a view of a robust practice of faith in society, a clashing of ideas in the public square, in the marketplace of ideas, disagreement on theological matters, but an acceptance of one's ability to express those matters in the public square. This is what the modern, the anti-religious progressive mindset that has been behind a lot of these anti-religious arguments that we've seen in recent years doesn't understand. That mindset wants to wipe that public square clean of anything religious, regardless of ultimately, if that person's consistent, it's regardless of the religious origin of that religious view being expressed. Christianity is often the focus, but that person would wipe the square clean of all religions. And this is why people have different faiths when they look at the policy the ministerial advanced and articulated. all support it. And this is why you saw people of different faiths at the ministerial and what the Trump administration is trying to do in this regard. So it's really important for people to look at the policy being advanced here and cut through the press hype when it talks about religious freedom.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along on this Labor Day. And we're not laboring here because we're talking about something we are passionate about at the Family Research Council, and that is religious freedom. It is our first freedom. We've talked about that. I talk about it a lot. There's a reason it is our first freedom, as articulated in the Bill of Rights. It's because everything else hinges on it. And Travis, this has the ability, what this administration is doing, and not just giving lip service to religious liberty, but literally advancing policies both here in the United States and abroad in its foreign policies. The Secretary of State, I mean, first ever ministerial on religious to advance religious freedom. He held it. First ministerial he held, the first event that he had as Secretary of State. This has the ability to, it's hard to put into words the impact this could have globally by making this a priority in our foreign policy like never before.
It is a real opportunity. And, you know, you look at the ministerial, the fact that it was held, you look at what's coming out of this. The Potomac Declaration articulating what religious freedom means, and this goes back to how we've talked about it, a human right, people having the freedom to choose their faith and live it out, and a plan of action. And in addition to a religious freedom fund that the government is going to start up and the Genocide Recovery and Response Program, these are concrete steps that have the potential to really make a dent in worldwide religious freedom problems. This is a real moment of hope and opportunity for us to all rally around these initiatives and move the ball down the field. And I would invite, you know, if the New York Times or anyone wants to really get into this, go look at the Potomac Declaration. Tell me in there what is disagreeable to people who want to rally around religious freedom, regardless of what the specifics are of what people believe. But you tell me in there what is actually so objectionable and disagreeable. There's nothing in there. It's a defensible, historic religious freedom policy that this administration has had the foresight and placed the priority on, put it on paper, following this ministerial as a real marker on the field that we can now pick up and move the ball down the field. This is really something to rally around. And I would challenge them, tell me in there what is so objectionable, what you want to work against. This is something that really everyone, all Americans, can get behind. And really, it'd be fantastic if the Potomac Declaration of Religious Freedom and some of these steps coming out of the ministerial are really put into place in the months and years ahead.
I think if they were honest, it's not what's in the declaration that's objectionable. It's the fact that it is being promoted and advanced in many cases by evangelicals. I think that's their issue. I think it's with this hostility we have toward in this country from the media toward evangelicals. And I think part of it, and I've had some of these conversations, Travis, I think part of it is, look, they agree with us on people should have a freedom to choose, but they disagree with us on so many other things, human sexuality, the sanctity of human life, and all of these other things. And I've tried to explain why I've had these conversations. I said, look, we're not cherry picking. We're not just saying we like religious liberty or, you know, we think sanctity of human life. It's because all of those views emanate from our faith and they're non-negotiable. I mean, it's not like we can just pick and choose what we want to do as followers of Christ. But we're basically emulating God, which is what we're called to do. God gives man a choice. He has freedom, and we're to seek to do the same, to give man freedom and the freedom to choose.
Yeah, these are matters of the conscience, right? So for the Christian who says, I need freedom to follow my conscience on matters of sexuality, but I'll recognize the right of others to do the same and the freedom to practice faith in other areas, that's actually the most consistent position, contrary to the progressives, those in the sort of agnostic or anti-religious space who say, yeah, we're fine with this person because they want to serve the poor with a food truck, but we're not okay with this Christian objecting to facilitating a same-sex marriage or wedding ceremony because we don't like that exercise of religion. That's the very inconsistent position that many on the anti-religious left are now taking and being exposed for taking. This is going, you know, going back to the Potomac Declaration, Tony, this is true. When they have to admit that, honestly, they're objecting to something because of the people behind it, which the New York Times sort of does, but really getting them on record with this, they're exposed, and they're shown to not actually have been supporting religious freedom, despite the fact that, you know, many still think of some of the left supporting religious freedom. So this is a very important point, and people need to be on record with what the policies are that they're supporting.
And to address the issue of the evangelical connection, as if somehow evangelicals are just now trying to seize this issue, because the New York Times took a swipe at the vice president and other evangelicals by saying, and now they refer to religion as the first freedom. I mean, that's not new. It's been that way. It's like they just woke up and discovered that. But this goes all, I mean, this goes back 20 years where Congress, I mean, it goes back further than that, but Congress 20 years ago passed the law that really set the stage for what we're seeing unfold right now when it comes to international religious freedom.
Yeah, this is interesting, right? Because for one, who picked up the ball and moved the religious freedom initiatives down the field in the late 90s on international religious freedom issues? It was a number of different groups, but evangelicals were a part of that effort. Going back further, you know, the press, it's kind of interesting when you really start to think about it. The press wants to use the term evangelical and sort of like segment that group off, but evangelical Christians have been at work a lot longer than the modern press, you know, wants to sort of focus on or give them credit for. And the historic traditions of religious freedom in our country were developed in large part due to a number of different Christian, you know, specific brands of Christianity. But the Christian milieu that made up our country, intersecting and interacting with other components and aspects of a developing free society, developed the concepts of religious freedom that we've had, and we put them in law in the Constitution, but then we developed them culturally. Evangelicals were a part of that. So, you know, it's kind of silly that they want to, you know, come along now and sort of talk about this. And if they really want to talk about it, go do a study in history and go look at how religious freedom developed in the U.S. and Western societies, and then come back, and then we can talk about the issue. But don't just focus on one, you know, one aspect in a sort of surface manner.
All right, Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoy your Labor Day.
Thank you, Tony.
And we look forward to, by the way, folks, religious liberty is going to be a major theme at this year's Values Voter Summit. Travis will be there. I'll be there. A lot of folks, in fact, will be there. I hope you will be there. It's filling up quick, especially this is kind of like the final home stretch after Labor Day. The campaigns begin in earnest, and people begin to, you know, focus on these matters. And so we have record attendance. We're on track for record attendance at the Values Voter Summit. There's still some space available, but I encourage you to register now. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over, and you can be a part of this year's Values Voter Summit. Speaking of religious freedom, we are honoring Frank Wolf at the gala on Saturday night. The Ambassador for Religious Freedom will be there. We'll also be hearing from the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. So great lineup. Great lineup at this year's Values Voter Summit. All right, folks, I hope you have a great day. Thanks so much for joining us. Again, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, you've gotten the heart of God, he's given you a passion, and you've taken your stand, guess what? Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.